Hi, this is Carolyn Elliott.
And I'm Layla Bernard.
And you are listening to the Sleepover Podcast.
Hi, everybody. We missed you.
Hey, missed you. It's been a while. We've just been busy doing stuff. Did we do the second immersion? Was that in April?
Yes, we went to the Dr. Robert training, and we interviewed Robert and Luzette about unnecessary human suffering.
Yeah.
Then we spoke to our lovely listeners about Talos and Thelema. Then we went to the second immersion of Sleepover Mystery School.
In Miami.
And then we came back for like a brief moment. And then we went to the second half of the training for the Destination Method with the amazing, thrice greatest Dr. Robert. Magus Robert, and now we're back.
Well, that's been quite a whirlwind, folks. I mean, it's been a magical mystery tour for sure. So we have stuff to talk about today, but maybe before we get into it, I don't know, is there anything else we want to update our listeners on? Any new major insights that you feel like you've had?
Well, I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast yet, but I feel like I just can't shut up talking about it. I think maybe I did on the last one, but just like really feeling the true weird magic of how it's all in your mind. Yeah. Just every single thing. There is no world outside your mind. And I always kind of just, you know, believed that axiomatically and was operating under that assumption as a magician. But having gone to these amazing trainings, I am now just even more freakishly convinced that that is absolutely the case. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've said that 1,000 times in your presence. So I know you've heard me say that before, but I just keep tripping out on how it's really all just in your mind.
Yeah, because something that we've learned from Dr. Robert is that, you know, basically that people's minds are map makers of their experiences, and we all have these maps or representations that are pretty much made up of sensory information.
Well, visual. like your body is just basically the data collection apparatus for your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is your mind. And that's like, man, that's another thing. We were tripping out on that when we were walking around the El Segundo LAX Hilton Garden Inn magical temple was, you know, we really think, like, we are trained in the, like, scientifically rational world to think about our minds being contained within our brain. That our mind is in our head, specifically in our brain. But that actually our whole body is in our mind. And that's like how the mind creates disease in the body, mm-hmm. and how diseases are also manifestations of the mind, because the body is just a manifestation of the mind. So,
bless you.
You know, there's the saying, the cobs is in the coo.
Not the coo is in the cobs.
It's not that way. It's the other way.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it's weird. Like somehow we're in the mind, and the mind, even in the present moment, is having, you know, a bunch of sensory experiences that it's then like turning into the maps.
Well, and the sensory experiences themselves are interpretations of whatever particles or waveforms or something is out
there.
Of
God's mind. Like, right. We're picking up God's thoughts that are coming to us as sounds, vibrations, smells, whatever.
And so the sort of raw sensory data. Sorry, Walter's playing video games in the room.
We're at my house, and my son is playing Minecraft on the internet with his friends. So just welcome to Midwest mom Magus life.
And very excited.
That's just the way that it is.
I just didn't want somebody to think that like Walter was being attacked.
Well, he is, but only in the virtual world, and everything is probably fine with him physically in his room. He's right. Probably okay.
And speaking of virtual world, so our sensory input is just like a user interface that like greatly simplifies, right? Like the spectrum of light, the
right.
spectrum of sound, everything is getting made selectively.
Yeah, there's different kinds of vibrations that you pick up with different sense apparatuses. The super high vibrations that are light, your eyes get those, the like medium vibrations that are sound, your ears get those, and then your body picks up the like densest vibrations, which is like stuff.
Right, so then the mind takes these sensory inputs and, you know, basically has them as memories or uses them to create anticipated experiences.
Calls them words, sorts them immediately into some concept called a word.
And then we're walking around and, well, what's fascinating to me is that, like, you know, I can have a certain set of representations for my relationship with a certain person. Like, this has been proved to me, like, very dramatically with David, where, like, my mind, and I'm probably, I'll just guess, everybody's is sort of evolutionarily tuned to the negative, like tuned to like focus more on like the worst, yuckiest things.
Yeah, Richard Rudd talks about how like fear has a super important evolutionary function, which is to like make us vigilant to protect our bodies from harm. So like, yeah, you like react sort of at a baseline of like, what's going on? Where is that coming from? Are you going to hurt me?
Yeah. So I would have this phenomenon with David where like, you know, we would have arguments or upsets and then he would do work to change himself and like move on and be better. But I wouldn't be able to like completely let go, even though I would like want to be forgiving. Like the memories or whatever would be disturbing to me.
The representations of David in your mind.
Yes. And so even though David himself had changed and was not doing the same old behaviors, I felt like I was still... Hold on, Lulu wants...
Lulu's looking at cartoons.
Anyways, I was responding to my representations and not to the reality of him. And so it was very dramatic, like... doing a lot of work to update those representations and sort of, you know, like adjust the visual images and the auditory information that comes up when I think of David. Like, now I feel like I'm interacting with a totally new person, and I am, because he has worked on himself, he has changed, but it's like my mind couldn't let him be a new person.
Well, and he wasn't in your mind, right. And that's all that was ever real for you, which was the David in your mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like the, you know, just to continue seeing the praises of like the Talos and like really like training your mind to perceive the inherent innocence of everything and the like desire for creating good of everything. Like, if you really make that a deep practice, it's much easier to like, you just... The underlying map of reality is, like, everyone's trying to do something good. Like, maybe they suck at it, but, like, they're trying, which, like, automatically, like, tunes your system to, like, forgiveness and compassion and, like, understanding and patience and, basically less hate and unpleasantness and suffering.
Indeed, indeed. Which, speaking of unpleasantness and suffering... But maybe it's time to go to our inspiration for today's episode.
Oh, yes. We were trying to decide what to talk about this morning or today. And I was remembering, I was getting a lot of inspiration from my delightful boyfriend who was having a really sad moment this morning because he was just, I had been listening to some Ken Wilber talking about Satori and like enlightenment and non-dual realization and just like really vibing on like what Ken was saying, which is that it's ineffable. You can't, I mean, it's effable in your own experience, but it's totally uncommunicable to another person. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot, you can say some words, but as soon as you say words about a non-dual experience, you're not talking about the non-dual experience because words simply don't exist there. They just don't even come close. And so it's not even possible to communicate this experience. And so my dear sweet Rory got very sad because he was like, I don't even know what you're talking about, Layla. I just wish I'd had an experience like that. And he was feeling very sad and sorry for himself that he was not feeling fully enlightened already and creating a lot of suffering.
Well, I think really the core of the problem is Rory failed to do what it takes.
Failed to do what it takes. Become enlightened.
To become enlightened. I mean, it's basically, well, it's a matter of failure.
And general ineptitude and incapacity. So you can know that about yourself too if you feel like you have not already achieved
complete non-dual awareness. It's a matter of awareness. Not being good enough. That's what really it comes down to.
Yep, that's basically what all the sages say, is if you're not enlightened, it's because you're just not good enough.
Yeah. So we can all just, you know, take that into our hearts and really... No, obviously, I just like to jag Rory because Rory is a Capricorn sun with a Cancer moon, and I feel like I'm very familiar with the way that that particular astrological configuration will assault a person.
Yeah.
It has assaulted me many times. I mean, there's been many times. I mean, when Layla brought this up to me, and I was like, wow, I've complained that way so many times that I've been like, oh, I'm just so mad I'm not completely enlightened yet. What WTF? Like,
it's not fair.
There's been, you know, so many
I've
hours.
I've done everything I'm supposed to do.
All the meditations, the prayers, the sweat lodges, the ayahuasca, the diets, the...
Oh, high magic, invoking angels.
Yeah.
Everything.
And Layla has always, I mean, I feel like I can anticipate your argument in the matter, which is, you know, Carolyn, we're all already completely enlightened.
You don't need to worry about it at all.
There's nowhere to arrive.
There's nowhere to go. Problem. You're fine. You're already there.
And
the only problem is that you're not willing to admit it to yourself yet.
Right. Right. Well, and this is where it gets really interesting, the question of what constitutes enlightenment. And I feel like the most thorough discussion that I've seen of this is in Daniel Ingram's Mastering the Core Teachings of the Buddha. And of course, Ken Wilber is also very good at discussing it. But I feel like Daniel Ingram is really good because he goes systematically through each possible model of what people associate with the word enlightenment, from like, you know, never having negative emotions is a popular one, to, you know, being omniscient or like having full command of the cities, being able to like walk through walls, to let's see what some other notions that people have about enlightenment. Always happy, always blissful. I mean, that's pretty much the same as saying no negative emotions, or just very stoic, very like peaceful all the time. He describes a few different other ones. Those are the ones that I'm most attached to, so they stick out in my mind. And he does this really beautiful job of like reasoning through why each of those is basically complete bullshit that was invented by various religions at various times to like make themselves sound more attractive, make their founders sound
way cool and powerful,
way cool and, you know, amazing. And that so Daniel Ingram's argument, and I'm pretty sure that Ken Wilber would totally agree with him on this, is that technically speaking, enlightenment is just realizing that everything that you think is subject is actually object. It's the object of the omnipresent, eternal, qual-like consciousness that has no qualities, that is utterly transparent, utterly pervasive, has no desires, no anything. And then your body, emotions, phenomena are all just happenings as objects within this field of consciousness, which is... has no qualities other than, whoops.
That's the timer on our little custard cups.
Oh, we're making custard. Yeah, we're making these beautiful tarts. Okay.
The Queen of Hearts will have her tarts.
Yes.
I was just going to get up and get those. Thank you.
Thank you, Rory.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that seems like the most, like, I think these other cool things are really awesome and dope. And if you want, you could become... like the master of your emotions and never feel anything bad or do awesome things like teleport and walk through water or walk on water and whatever. But it does seem to me like the most consistent and reasonable, achievable thing is, yeah, identification as the like witnesser, not the witnessed. Like really having one's like truest identity being known as like that which beholds and encompasses all things.
Right, and it's so fascinating because, you know, like Ken Wilber talks about states and stages. Like, it's totally possible to have that awareness and be a complete...
asshole.
A total asshole. Like, probably definitely Aleister Crowley was there. Like, he totally got it, totally got the emptiness of self and everything. And the collection of karmic tendencies that was Aleister Crowley was just still an asshole.
Was still ready. And I think, you know, I was really touched. I read a Ken Wilber essay when we were down in Tulum where he was really talking about how, like, once you really do lean into and, like, seat the awareness in that space, you don't actually become, like, less of a character in your life.
I love
you
that.
Actually become more of a character in your life. Yes. You can feel your feelings more strongly. You can behave more flamboyantly because you're not even worried about you. Like, it's an interesting thing where, like, you become like less self-conscious of your ego body performance because you are deeply conscious of your real self, and you just can, like, play in the game with much more, like, reckless abandon because you're like, well, that's not even really me. Why not put on a good show? Why not be in it fully? Why not enjoy it to its extreme? As opposed to, like, when we're very, like, in our, like, little self, there's so much wondering about, like, how should I be? How should this go? Like, how should I perform? Like, it's a very stage fright kind of, like, writer's block, like, over-focus on, like, it's hyper-self-conscious.
Yeah, and I love how he talks about that because it really does counteract the notion that, like, you know, if you're egoless and you're basically a bowl of oatmeal because you, you know, don't have any...
Right, if you're enlightened, you must be completely, completely detached from the world and, like, go sit in a cave somewhere and, like, meditate because you know that, like, the rest of the world is bullshit. But, like, the paradox is that when you know that the world is, like, an illusion and, like, so are you, then, like, it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I also thought it was really cute. I heard an interviewer ask Ken Wilber, you know, like, so, Ken... are you enlightened?
Uh-huh.
He was like, I'm enlightened enough.
That's a great response.
I thought that was a great response. It was totally adorable. It was like, you know.
Well, and I think I've also heard Ken be like, well, Ken Wilber is not. And, like, most all, like, sages who try to communicate what this experience is like, well, of course, like, I'm not. But, like, that's not what that thing is. Like, mm-hmm. It's not a quality of Carolyn or Rory or Layla. It's a quality that exists, like, prior to and beyond the world. So, like, no, it's not me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what's also really interesting is Daniel Ingram talks about how it's possible to have this, like, non-dual gnosis and still be, like, totally neurotic and, like, filled with negative emotions and, like, and he, you know, he talks about it because he, you know,
is according neurotic.
Well, not anymore, but I guess according to his own standards, you know, he pretty soon reached a level called stream entry. In the Theravadan Buddhist path, which is like the first level of enlightenment, and still had a bunch of, you know, relational issues, like emotional stuff that he needed to work out in other ways. And I think that's really fascinating. Like, when I learned that, I was like, you know what, I think I'm going to focus a little bit less on meditation, realizing that, like, I can meditate my way to total enlightenment and still be crazy, and I'm gonna try to work on my stuff. And that's part of why I'm so grateful for the Dr. Robert and Dr. Luzette's work, is that, you know, they really have a way of restoring people to emotional, psychological health, which is so enjoyable, which is so wonderful. But those practices and processes are not the classical enlightenment processes. They're more like about integrating and differentiating the various parts of the psyche.
Well, it's interesting because I have, like, after encountering, you know, their healings and, you know, doing some of them on people myself, it occurs to me that, like, I'm gonna very badly quote Rumi. I'm just gonna reference this idea that Rumi, you know, says like, it's not our job, or maybe this is Khalil Gibran or something. I don't know. I'm totally gonna butcher it because this is not my forte. But it's like, the task is not to like search for love or like search for this oneness. The task is to like remove the obstacles in your being from just knowing that and being that and having that already. And I feel like that's exactly what the TDM processes do, is they just like polish the mirror. They just, they wipe the shit off of the pure mirror so that you can just like let the light of God shine through you better and more.
Yes, the great non-dual teaching of the American Midwest, Course in Miracles, also has that statement. It says, I think
it's... Is that where it's from?
I mean, people attribute it both.
I feel like it's just true.
It's just true. And people often attribute it both. I've seen it in A Course in Miracles. I've seen it attributed to Rumi. I don't know where it came from first. I mean, Rumi was older than A Course in Miracles. But anyways, it was channeled in the stream.
It was channeled.
Consciousness. Yeah, you don't need to seek for love. You need to remove the blocks against love.
Yeah, and I mean, that is exactly what all weird negative thinking and, like, you know, nasty, hateful maps and, like, judgmental garbage is just, like, places where the love gets blocked, you know, like that's it. And so there's really nothing fundamentally wrong with any person at all. It's just like, were you to be able to remove the blocks, you would be shining forth the pure love of Christ just as well as anybody. And so like, that's really the task, is not to like find this thing or create this thing that you don't already have. It's to recognize that, like, you already have it. It's already right there. It is what you really are. And anywhere that you don't think that that's true, that's the thing.
Yeah. So I would say that TDM is the path to saintliness and happiness.
Lightning path.
The lightning path, which, you know, and then you can, once you're really happy and loving, then you can do all the non-dual practices. Anyways, I've had a number of Satori experiences because I've put in the work, Rory. And unlike other people, but...
And to be fair, Rory, to be fair, you know, you were feeling very miserable this morning. One of the things that I wanted to say to you, but I didn't think it would be terribly helpful, is that I feel like the times that I've had my most amazing Satori experiences have been in the depths of misery. Because sometimes you just go so low that you just pop out the other side. You know, you reach the singularity if you let yourself go low enough. So you don't even really have to be perfectly content and happy to touch the place where bliss and misery, you can get there from either side, is I guess what I'm trying to say. You know, misery will take you to the still point just as quickly as bliss.
It's true. I'm sorry, Rory. I just keep jagging you. I'm sure you've done tons of...
I feel very loved.
Okay.
I hear Layla saying I should have just kept going.
Yeah, just you should have. Yeah, exactly. Your mistake was trying to not feel miserable instead of just become as miserable as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, I have had a bunch of them. And what's always so amazing to me is that, like, you know, that and $10 will get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Right. Like, it really doesn't. It's right. Like, it's over. You come down from it. I don't know. There's probably been ones that have had lasting impacts on my consciousness. So that's not exactly true. But it is true that it's like...
Well, because it's the resting state of all being and it is the ground of all being, it is kind of a so what kind of experience. And like, I really like feel how it is a so what kind of experience once you've had it. But if you've never had it, then there is a like, oh, I just really want to know. And like, oh, I just like got to get there. And like seeking. And then that's the joke. I mean, to me, that is like the great cosmic joke, is that like you arrive there and you're like, damn. Okay, next moment. Like, I got there, and now I just keep going.
Yeah.
There's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, might as well scroll Instagram.
Might as well, you know, might as well fuck around, you know? There's really, that's what we're all doing.
But there are people who say, you know, that there's no point in doing any spiritual practices because we all are already enlightened or whatever. And, I mean, I would disagree with that. Like, I think there's a lot of point in doing spiritual practices. I think you can change your consciousness in very rewarding ways through spiritual practice. You can evolve yourself, you know, in all the ways that we talked about, TDM evolving you. I mean, TDM is a spiritually oriented set of things. And then, like, the more non-dual focused, like, meditation and everything.
Yeah, but, like, if you go to, like, a Zen monastery, the spiritual practice that they'll have you do is, like, washing everyone's laundry and, like, mopping the floor. So, like, really anything that you might choose to do done in the proper mindset is a spiritual practice. Like picking up the phone and talking to another suffering addict is a spiritual practice. Like it's a spiritual experience should you choose to make it one.
Well, let me ask you this, Layla. When did you first realize that you were completely enlightened?
Well, I allowed myself to believe that I was completely enlightened after I had an amazing vision of, the Temple of the Immortals, in an ayahuasca trip where I felt a pillar of flame erupt from the top of my head after seeing this wonderful, like, infinite ziggurat of covered in red votive candle flames. And I understood that the red votive candle flames were, like, the flame of every enlightened being ever. And there was, like, infinite of them. And it just, like, came into my awareness. I was like, oh, cool. I have a flame in the Temple of the Immortals now. Got it. And then I just was like, okay, got it. No big deal.
You're in the City of Pyramids.
There we go.
That's what Crowley would say.
Yeah, well, I mean, it appeared to me really as, like, an infinitely tall, infinitely deep, spire temple, with covered in red votive candles, and I just understood that the red votive candles were the illuminated heart and mind of every being that had ever become illuminated, and I understood that I was receiving this vision and having a fucking pillar of flame erupt from my head in this moment because, like, my votive candle had illuminated on the temple, and then I just was like, okay, got it. And then I stopped worrying about it. And it was very interesting because, like, it was very interesting, like, sort of state change for me because, like, pretty much my whole teen and adult life was characterized by the, like, desperate longing to become enlightened. Like, it was a very driving, like, needy force in my being. Like, I would read books about, like, this state of consciousness, like, It was probably, like, the only thing that I, like, truly desired in a deep way. And then I had that experience, and that drive just, like, disintegrated. I, like, basically no longer cared whether I was enlightened or not, or, like, didn't need to pursue proof of enlightenment anymore. And that, to me, just felt like, okay, like, that is the satiation of the desire because it was met. And so I just don't worry about it anymore. And, like, I'm still a little, like, dorky human with, like, a regular personality who, like, does weird stuff and, like, has feelings. But, like, I don't wonder anymore about what it would be like. You know what I mean? Like, it just, like, the craving was satisfied. And so that's how that is basically the evidence that I have because I can't really share. I mean, like, the Satori experience is unshareable. So, like, I don't know. I just see myself from a different lens. Yeah. Like, I know that, like, okay, I'm doing this, but, like, I don't really fully take it personally.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I can put on a good show. Like, you've heard me complain about stuff. You've seen me
be...
It's
very persuasive at times.
It is. It is. But, you know, like, I can... Like, sometimes that is, like, the frustrating thing because I'm like, wow, there's a part of me that's, like, really invested in this because I desire to connect with other people in the realm of stuff and, like, the realm of people and the realm of emotions. Like, does this really matter? No. No, it doesn't, but, like, I'm still going to do it.
Yeah, I think Ramana Maharshi said that you can only stay in that kind of perfect communion with the self with a capital S if you truly don't have any desires for worldly stuff.
Right.
Because as long as you are interacting with the world, it does sort of put you into... at least sort of like the framework of duality, right? Like I'm a subject interacting with objects sort of thing. And that makes sense to me. And it makes sense to me that like, yeah, I continue to experience duality because...
I like it.
Here. I like it. I still want to. I'm not ready to completely relax into the great infinite.
Well, and that's why I love in the Western Hermetic tradition the emphasis on Tifereth consciousness. And, you know, like, I go to church on Sunday, and so I hear the, like, little poem metaphor of, like, God so loved the world that he gave his only son to the world, and he became incarnate as a human. And, like, I really feel how, like, that's what we are, because God so loved the world so much, like, so obsessed with the world that, like, we come... to be the world and to like be buffeted about by like the feelings and happenings of it. And like, we like that. We do that. And like, our task is to love that and not feel like beset upon and like abandoned and like hateful of the experience, but like not to leave it entirely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think some of the enlightenment experiences that get like really glorified and like, oh my God, of like total dissolution. Like that's definitely the like highest Kether union. But like you say, like if you're in the world and you don't just want to completely peace out of the world, you're going to land lower on the tree, but that's still different than just being like completely encapsulated in the illusion and thinking of it as the only reality.
It's true. It's true. I do, you know, talking about it now, I realize that like, I think maybe last year, year before, I don't know, time, but for a while I was super obsessed. I super wanted complete dissolution in Kether. You know, you and I would talk about it. And I think, you know, looking back, I'm like, oh, well, it's because I was in pain from these representations and, you know, wounds and everything that I had going on. And I know that in Kether there is no pain.
No.
And there's just this, I mean, there's this, well, there's a lot, but there's this like... pulse, I don't know, it's incredible, it's gorgeous, but it is the total resolution of everything. It's like, you know, it's the zero part of the zero equals two.
Right.
It's
right.
Like the totally chill, man. And I wanted to be absorbed in that total chillness because I, you know, was just having issues with duality. So anyways, for anybody out there who is pretty obsessed with like getting to the complete dissolution into utter nirvana or Kether or whatever, I would say you probably need a lot of healing.
Yeah.
And that you can heal yourself emotionally. Because after having gone through all of the stuff with TDM and a lot of the existential kink stuff help too, for sure.
It hurts less to be in the world of duality.
Yes. It's more fun.
Yes.
And less ouchy.
Less ouchy.
And there's more skillfulness. And I would say, like, that is, you know, a huge part of the Bodhisattva path is getting the skillfulness to, like, transform energies.
Right.
And, you know, the Tibetans have a certain way of doing that. And I think that the, you know, the Western alchemical modern evolutions of Jung and existential kink and TDM are really great ways of transforming energies. So yeah, so you transform the ouchies, and then
it's a wonderful
cool.
party.
It's pretty great.
It's pretty great to be here. It's pretty an all right time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the interesting thing that, like, I sort of see now in the, like, desire for total dissolution is that it's a very spiritualized, trigger warning, suicide wish.
Yes.
It's like, and I have a lot of sympathy for that. Like, I really understand that. And, like, and I also just am, like, so pleased and happy because I'm like, wow, I'll get to have that when I die. Like, in my mind, I think of the state of death as total healing. Like, that is the time when all wounds will be, like, healed. Every disease is healed. You will have no pain whatsoever is when you're dead. And to me, that's what enlightenment is. Well, that kind of, like, total dissolution is, like, perfect bliss, perfect oneness, perfect everything. And everyone gets to have that experience. You've been there many, many times before. You'll be there again. You don't need to worry about that. That's coming. You got that to look forward to. And the task of, like, being embodied is to, like, yeah, enjoy being embodied, having a good time. And, like, you know, I think that's why I enjoy thinking about, like, being as dead as I will ever be is, like, having that union and knowing that that's true so that the, like, pains of the world don't hurt as badly. You know, like, it's not – it can't really, like, assail the thing that you really are. Like, the thing that you really are is completely incorruptible, totally inviolable, absolutely innocent, perfectly wonderful all the time anyway, no matter what you do and no matter what happens to you. So you just, like, you don't need to take it all so seriously.
Yeah, like, Cancer moons are really good.
Oh, stink. So seriously, I know, we are. It's so ouchy.
Well, I'm curious about what Rory's frustrations with enlightenment are.
Well, it's so interesting because, I mean, you can speak for yourself, but the thing that I found really interesting that you were saying to me on the couch this morning was that you were, like, talking about your, like, connection with self and feeling like you didn't have a, like, strong enough, like, faith in self or, like, connection with self. I'm not going to say this perfectly, but it was, like, so funny to me because, like, you were like, I really just, like, wish that I could, like, know myself better so that, like, I could feel better in the world. And I was just sort of laughing internally, but I kept it to myself because I thought it would be rude if I started laughing at you at the time of, like, yeah, but that's the, like, joke and that's the trick is that, like, your self is empty. Like, there is no self. Like, it's silly. Like, you aren't that. So, like, that's the great paradox of, like, self-awakening is that, like, the more you are trying to, like, make your little self real, the more you will encounter deep, deep misery because it's not. And it will always disappoint you. You will never actually have that kind of, like, deep spiritual satisfaction that, like, the heart longs for in the little self because you actually do know on a deep level that it's not real and it can't ever give you that juice that you want from it because it's not real. It's an illusion. And the more that you, like, let go of, like, needing to be a way in order to be good enough and are just like, I'm not even real. I'm fucking emptiness. I am not a person at all. Then you can be a person. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like very paradoxical, but very true, I think.
Yeah, and people who are good enough understand that.
Yeah, you become good enough by letting go of wanting to be good in any way. Yeah.
Okay, I'll get here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sometimes that I think about, you know, Carl Jung talks about how, you know, from thousands of years of Christianity, we've had it preached to us to, you know, be forgiving and accepting of, like, the wretch and the loser and the bums on the street and the criminals and everything. But the real test of that is, you know, forgiving, embracing, and accepting.
The wretch and the bum and the criminal in yourself.
Yes, the bum within. The bum and the loser and the pathetic wretch and the...
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Like, really, that's the love thine enemy, and the enemy
within.
To me, I don't know, maybe I've talked about this on the podcast before, but like, I sometimes when I'm at church, I'm like, man, I don't feel guilty about any of the classical sins, you know, right? I'm not breaking 10 commandments all over the place, but like,
you know, your fair share of coveting, Carolyn.
I probably do coveting, but I'm not like, oh, I hate myself for coveting, or I don't know, I'm just, why don't I honor my mother and father more? I'm such a sinner. I feel like a sinner for, like, not having a relationship that all the time would make people on Instagram jealous. Mm. Like, I feel guilty for, you know, I don't know what, like... Yeah, I mean, I call them Instagram sins. Like, my modern guilt complexes are not the same as what I think our forebearers had.
Right.
They're like American, you know, self-presentation
sins. Yeah.
Ways that I fall short.
That you're not good enough.
That I'm just not good enough. Hold on, mommy and Layla are talking. Wait, you wanted to watch your show? I don't know where your show went.
It might be behind you.
Probably behind me. Anyways, when I remember that, I like to let myself be forgiven for my Instagram sins.
Yes.
I like to receive from Jesus.
Yeah.
To know that I'm still worthwhile, even though not everything about my life is enviable or aspirational at all times.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. I've been actually thinking about this a lot. I've been thinking about this a lot because, you know... Rory has been living with me for the last 6 weeks, and there have been a couple times when we've like had moments where like he feels bad and like says something to me, and I will like feel in myself the choice between like total forgiveness and just like being blissful in the face of another person's experience, or getting myself really hurt and like feeling like taking it personally and like choosing to be miserable because of something that somebody else said or did or how they're feeling. And I'm really like been deeply contemplating how like this is the actual nature of sin, is like at that choice moment when I could decide that like I totally forgive this other person and they're having their experience and I can just like continually be happy, or I can choose to be unhappy and like make it about me. When I choose to make it about me, that is when I am sinning. And I know that it's sin because I feel fucking bad. Like I feel bad when that happens, and it's like immediate karma, immediate punishment. Immediately I am transported to hell because I am feeling that something is bad and wrong and shouldn't be happening. Mm-hmm. And like the resolution of that is to be like, wow, I forgive myself for feeling that way. I forgive what has happened. I'm actually allowed to completely let that go and just feel okay in my heart and know that everything is fine. And then I'm transported back again into heaven. But like, to me, that seems like the real nature of, you know, the punishment or like the hell that we would experience from what is called sin is just like taking shit personally, making it about you, and having a bad time because of it.
Yes, I agree.
So anyway, I'm trying more and more to just be like, wow, I don't have to take any of that on. I really don't need to feel... I don't need to feel that way. I can just be okay, and I can forgive, and like forgiveness as like a balm. And I love the way Dr. Robert talks about forgiveness is like letting go of the idea that things should have been otherwise. Mm-hmm. Like just total radical acceptance of like, this is the way it is, and that is okay. Mm-hmm. Like nothing needs to be different in order for me to feel okay and have peace.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, I was just thinking maybe we should wind down for today because Lulu's getting fidgety.
Getting fidgety, totally, absolutely.
But thank you for listening, everybody. And I hope you all enjoy your complete and total enlightenment.
It's already yours.
It's already yours.
You're already fine. Don't worry about it.
All right. And because you're so enlightened, I know you'll want to like and subscribe and tell your friends and leave a review. Okay. Thanks. Bye.